Phil has a story from last night.
Well, we were just getting ready to have dinner. I had made this butternut squash soup. And we sat down and we were eating this, and then we go back to, and we get the text message about Jerry. And one of the last
friend of ours, and he just hosted a dinner at my house. Was at a dinner cooked for us at my house for the morning show.
Right.
Yeah.
And one of the things that he made at that dinner was a butternut squash soup. And he showed us how to decorate the
That's
top
wild.
Of the soup and everything. And we didn't have all the fancy stuff that he had graciously prepared for us that night, but we had like a little bottle of olive oil, and we put like the little swirl on the top, and we were using our fork to make the design like he showed us how to do, and we didn't know anything yet, you know. And it was just, I don't know, just, I'm sorry, I didn't know him as well as some other people here, but he was just such a kind guy, you know. And he just liked to share parts of his life with everybody, and it just felt like we were supposed to eat that. And then we were really having a hard moment, Amanda and I, last night, because he was so kind to Amanda, who he had never met. And as we're going to sleep, it's like 11 o'clock. It's like, it's just, you know, sleeping's tough right now. We get a text from my friend. It's a picture of his new baby. So they went to the hospital in Greenwich because they're too terrified to go to one in New York. And it's just terrifying what's going on. But it just was a really positive way to end the day.
Yeah.
All of our friends on this group text just virtually hugging our friends because we couldn't be with them. And my friend almost wasn't even allowed to go into the room with his wife as she was giving birth. Like, it's just, it's crazy out there. But it was a beautiful moment.
Thanks for sharing that. Oh, my God, to have
Sorry.
That soup.
Yeah.
And then get the message while you're having that soup.
Right.
That's incredible.
Jazz and AJ, Bruce Bennett Nissan News.
All right, do we have him on the phone now? Excellent. 99.1 PLR, 95.9 The Fox. Bridgeport Police and Health Department officials will begin enforcing the 8 p.m. shutdown of bodegas, variety stores, and other still open businesses as of today.
Oh.
I believe this is the first major city in Connecticut to do that. On the phone now, Mayor Joe Ganim of Bridgeport. Hey.
How are you?
Morning.
We're hanging in there.
Yeah, you?
Right.
Same.
It's a challenging time for everyone, but I see people pulling together in
it's nuts.
So many different ways.
I got to tell you, this story, Kristen sent it to me, and I'm like, this is nuts.
Right.
But nuts, but I think appropriate, right?
Necessary nuts.
Yeah, the mayor, it's interesting. I think it's a message that the stay at home is, we're trying to push to make people realize we've been relatively lucky, I think, with actions and communications, at least in Bridgeport and to a certain extent in Connecticut, although Fairfield County is getting hit pretty hard now. We saw the largest single spike in increase in positive tests in Bridgeport. I think it was yesterday or 2 days ago. I don't have yesterday's
numbers. Can I ask you something,
numbers.
Mayor? The
sure.
governor has said, it seems to be flattening. And when I look at the chart that they released yesterday, there was no flat line.
Right.
It's all up. And we had 878 new cases. To me, that doesn't seem like less.
No.
I think you would say flattening when you see 3 or 4 days of it's around the same.
Yeah, too soon to tell, man.
Those lines are all going up.
Yeah.
Would you call what's happening in the state flattening?
Well, the numbers are still going up, clearly, even in New York. I'm looking for a pattern of more than 4 or 5 days.
Right.
To say that you're looking at a slowing of the, and that's just, so people are listening, that's a slowing of the increase, a slowing of the increase. And every one of those numbers is a person. If they end up, I talked to someone last night who had a loved one who went through this. Our father died as a result. It is a terrible, terrible, not only a terrible disease, it's a terrible health path to go down. It happens so quickly. There's no goodbyes. There's very little of a ceremonial, even saying a funeral or anything.
And the person is basically drowning.
Drowning. It's terrible. And I didn't even know some of the, I don't get into it too much, but some of the other impacts on them during that period of time, not even able
bad,
to be
bad stuff.
Ghastly.
Bad stuff.
Yeah. Ghastly.
Ghastly. Great word for this.
So I saw Boston, a friend of mine, the mayor of Boston, they did it said it's a recommended curfew. It's a recommended curfew for people in business.
Recommended.
Those that I've had a chance to talk to, the responsible businesses, the larger ones, the grocery stores said, sure, we close at 8 or we close at 8:30. We want, you know, people got to get home and things like that. We understand that. We want to encourage people all over the city to be home, safe at home. And we think this is the best way to continue to push it as hard as we can. And we'll work with any of the businesses. Look, there's going to be people that need to go to work, come from work,
right,
are leaving grocery stores.
How do you
all that kind of
explain this to me now? What are the police going to be doing differently? I've heard something about they're going to be on the end of exits on 95.
No, you know, I don't know if they'll be on exits at the end of 95 or they won't. But what we will do is put up visibility at the probably the exits and high intersections with signs saying, stay at home. We actually had a picture of the sign up. I don't have it in front of me. Encouraging people, letting them know this is real, that this is their time to participate. Everyone has an impact on this by their own individual actions. It's not just mayors and healthcare workers. It's not just first responders. It's not just news outlets. Everybody has a role to play, and this can make a difference. And we're pushing as hard as we can with strong recommendations that everybody not only stay at home as often as they can during the day, but after 8 p.m., they were calling it a curfew.
I have to say, I think some of our mayors have been doing a terrific job with this, and you are definitely leading that. We can't turn on News 12 without seeing you doing something.
Seriously.
And our sister station, WICC, carries your press conference every day. What is the situation in Bridgeport with the assisted living? Are you having the same issues that East Haven had and now Milford?
I'm hesitating to say no because things change every day, but we've been, we have not had a situation particularly like that. And we've tried to do even more, and with limited supplies of PPE, we've been trying to give out even the surgical masks. But warning people, this is not kind of permission to just be out there. I don't want to say reckless, but be out there. But it's one, national experts all over are saying it's one more layer of protection. So use the protection when you do go out, when you need to go out, but minimize it. Go to the grocery store, get home, try and get that stuff done. The pharmacies, use protection. You can get your hand on gloves. If you don't have a mask, use a scarf. Protect yourself. And then let's hunker down as best we can. I'm really, as we are looking at this situation, the next couple weeks, as difficult as it is with the holidays, today being Passover and Easter coming up, for people to just really, let's get through this together. Let's get through it safe, as uncomfortable as it is.
What do you?
Some of the bodegas are open until 1, 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
And they're getting gatherings around there. And I think one of the strong messages is, come on, guys, let's hunker down for a few weeks. Let's not create an opportunity for this to spread unintentionally in situations like that. And that's one of the things we want to kind of slow down dramatically.
Mayor Joe Ganim of Bridgeport's on talking about police and health department officials going to be enforcing an 8 p.m. shutdown. Now, this is a requested shutdown.
Strongly recommended.
So you're not going to be picking people up? And
we're not locking people. No, we're not. Well, no, but we will be encouraging. You may have a loudspeaker say, break it up, go home. It's after 8 p.m.
What if they don't?
Get moving. Well, if they're violating the rules of gathering more than five, if they're doing that kind of thing, officers can be can go further. But we're not getting into that right now. We're just telling people, come on.
This is first wave.
Right.
And if people people don't act right, then it'll be a deal. It'll be, maybe you get picked up.
It'll be a thing.
What do you think about our state policy of non-essential workers and essential workers? Do you think the list is too broad? Do you think we have too many people going into work every day in Connecticut?
Well, I think as this goes on, and it doesn't, even when it plateaus, and let's hope it is plateauing. I think the more that we can stay home, and we'll call them the non-essential, and there's different categories of that, but the more non-essential can stay home, then we're doing our part. So I'm encouraging that. And every day I talk to people, and I get it. We're still saying, and maybe it's not clear, but let's just say, it doesn't mean you can't go out to the park, walk around, go for a jog.
Just do the right thing.
If we, do the right thing. This is again, everybody has a level of responsibility on this. Let's make sure we have our, I don't know, call it our game face, but our focus on health and safety of ourselves and others.
Mayor, have you run into anyone in Bridgeport and then just looked at them and said, are you guys stupid? What are you doing here?
Like, what are you doing? I've said to people, come on, of course, on social distancing, we're all kind of like, instead of walking over to somebody, you're stepping away. And
yeah, you're like, hey.
It's almost a second where you, right. Yeah. And I can't, you don't even finish a sentence. I can't shake your hand or I can't give you a hug. That was more common, I think, maybe a week or two ago. I think people get it now. And I wear the mask or something covering my face. And if I have them, the rubber gloves as often as I can.
Yeah.
And I'm very diligent with wiping stuff down. All city government, non-essentials, we call them, are home.
How are the hospitals? You feel like Bridgeport Hospital is, they have what they need?
Yeah, they're coming on at 12:30 today with us, them and St. Vincent's, the two major. And they're going to talk to the public. And we had a big, a lengthy call with them on Sunday night. And their numbers, thank God, are relatively good as far as capacity. They feel okay. They need more, like everyone else, PPE, ventilators. But they've been consistent with an okay level of bed space and so on. But there are facilities that are going to be opening maybe as early as today to back them up. So we'll have more news on that hopefully later today.
You know, I'd be interested in their protocol when ambulances show up with potential coronavirus patients or cases, because I've been hearing from ambulance people and they just say every hospital is different.
Yeah.
And some have it together. There's a protocol. We meet you outside. We take the stretcher in, bring the stretcher back out. We don't want you in there. Then there are others where you're just walking these patients right through a room with non-coronavirus patients. So I think it fluctuates depending on the hospital. Well, I think we need a statewide protocol.
You have to do a protocol, exactly. Yeah. A regimen.
I'm very concerned. I have a friend in Brooklyn, and her father just passed in 6 days.
Sorry.
He was healthy. They were horseback riding together. He started coughing. He went in. Once he went to the hospital, they couldn't get an answer. They couldn't see him. Sat in the, if they could sit in the building at all for days and days and days, doctors would come up respectfully and say, look, I don't have time for you. There's four of us on. I have 40 patients myself. Two of the doctors here have members of the family who died, and they're still coming to work. And so they couldn't get an answer. Couldn't find out. One point they said he was doing well. Next is they passed. They never saw him again. And then, of course, there's no funeral. There's no way to say goodbye. It is just one of those things. God forbid you ever come, even know anybody who had to go through it. You have to take a pause and recognize that, you know, recommended curfew or any other measures that are being out there that could help save lives. Stop and think about it. Think about it now while most of us have clearer heads on this.
Well, Mayor, thanks for coming on. We think you're doing a great job in Bridgeport. And
you guys are too.
Thanks. We got to check back in with you and see how this goes. It's a recommended shutdown after 8 o'clock in Bridgeport.
Yep.
So, all right, Mayor. Thank you.
Thanks so much. We'll talk soon.
You too. All right. Mayor Joe Ganim of Bridgeport.
Working hard, man.
He really is.
Every time I turn the TV on, there he is again.
Like, what's that now?
Every time I turn the TV on, there he is again.
You know? Yeah.
He's in the commercials. He's on the news. He's wearing the mask. He's wearing the gloves.
He's walking through commercials.
Exactly right. Yeah. McDonald's commercials. Like, what are you doing here?
There's an ad. There he is. Hey, is that the mayor? Right.
Is that Joe? That's Joe Ganim?
Is that him driving a brand new Chevrolet? The TV was off.
You drive it down 95. There
right.
he is.
Right.
Cleaning something up.
No, I'm not even tight with the bathroom. Yeah.
No, he really, our mayors have really stepped up.
They have. Mm. They really have.
You know, I think they realized early that there's no cavalry, there's no mom or dad. This is their city.
They're
and
leading
they need
their
to
own charge.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep, they're being leaders.
I mean, when you see like a city like New York's got to beg for extras, it's like, ooh, we better start taking care of what we can now.
But that's a city that doesn't have a strong mayor. I mean,
no.
The governor took over.
Blasio.
Now, remember after 9/11, Giuliani took over.
Yes, he
was
did.
The one that represented.
He brought it back,
the
man.
Crisis.
He had balls.
They didn't have a strong governor. They had a strong mayor. And now it's the opposite. They have a strong governor. They don't have a strong mayor.
Right.
So now you see the governor every day.
Right.
I think our mayors are doing a great job.
Yeah.
What were you going to say?
He had an ugly tie yesterday. Oh.
Who now?
Cuomo had this yellow clown-looking tie yesterday. I'm like, I don't know. He should be wearing that tie during this press conference. It looks something Ronald McDonald would wear.
Probably the last thing he was thinking about.
Probably. Yeah. It was his tie, yeah. Right.
Well, someone's got to remind him.
He has a very well-prepared briefing every day. Charts, graphs, slides, numbers. He knows the numbers inside and out. This is what you want. You want to feel like someone has a strong command of the information coming in and making decisions and acting on them and is ahead of what could be happening.
I was thinking squirting flowers.
And you're thinking, that yellow tie.
Fashion police.
Oh boy, it's time for Dumbass News.
Heck yeah.
It's time for Chaz and AJ Dumbass News.
Thank you.
Dumbass.
When you see a dumbass in the news, send it to dumbassnews@chazandajinthemorning.com. Mayor ordered police to crack down on social gatherings. They find wife at a party.
Oopsie. I don't know you.
Sent in by tribe member Joe Pontino.
Get off the dresser, hon.
The mayor in Illinois issuing a warning that police would arrest people caught out during the lockdown.
Where's your other shoe?
And then his wife got caught at a bar.
Oh, look at that.
Oh, come on. Ah.
So we have a clip of the warning he posted on Facebook the other day.
These are very serious times, and I am begging you, please stay at home. Doing so is vital to our health. I have directed the police department to use their discretion in issuing citations or making arrests for those refusing to follow the state-issued stay-at-home mandate.
Oh. What does that say about the mayor when the cops don't go up to her and say, hey, you shouldn't be here. Let's get you out of here.
Yeah, but
actually, get her out.
You are under arrest.
Yeah.
Actually, get her out.
As it turns out, she likes cuffs, so yeah. We're good.
All right.
Yeah. A little kinky.
Yeah.
Yep.
Hey, he gave us the discretion. We arrest anyone we want.
He probably told her, hey, hon, why don't you go to a bar tonight?
I mean, you just lose all credibility right there.
He's dancing right now. He's doing the whole Tom Cruise thing, sliding across the floor.
He puts out the lockdown order. And then has an argument with her and says, you know what, you should. There's an event at the bar.
Go to the bar right now. Right. Next to he's making macaroni and cheese underwear. Yep.
All right, next story. And I posted this on our Facebook page. Phil, you want to just take a look? This is the story I posted yesterday. Pastor who criticized coronavirus mass hysteria dies from illness.
Whoops.
Guy was in Virginia.
Yep.
Criticized the mass hysteria surrounding the coronavirus pandemic. He has died of the illness.
Right.
It's called irony right there.
Was that a Southern accent?
Yes.
If people attempt,
I hope
yes.
So. If not, what the hell's wrong
I was thinking Jersey.
You have an aneurysm?
Yeah, how you doing? Yeah, doing good.
I'm scanning to find his age. I don't see his age.
Right. He looked like it's like mid like 50s.
He didn't look old.
No.
And so clearly some underlying medical conditions.
Right.
But there are a lot of church people who just, I know they're drawn to this because this is where they go when they feel like they need some strength.
Right,
they,
for their
they feel
faith.
Like they
yeah.
charge their batteries.
Yeah, yeah. You don't like charge at home. Go online.
But
online charging.
That's good for you, but you're risking other people. Now, this guy asked for it, right?
Yep, he did.
I didn't want to say he asked for it,
yeah.
But he asked for it.
Yeah, Jesus.
But he asked for it.
Jesus said, I'm going to speak to you personally.
Yeah. He's like,
get over
ring.
Here. Right.
Yeah. Get over here.
Oh, my God, it's Jesus.
Yeah.
I'm right there.
You wanted to speak to Jesus?
Right.
I'm right here.
Right.
Any comments?
Yeah, a lot of people mentioning that it's a Darwin Awards candidate.
Oh, yeah, right. Big time. Yep.
Mm-hmm. I like Betty's comment. This was God's gift to this dumbass pastor, which feels like a gift for the rest of us.
Did you grab that audio I sent you yesterday, or is it still in your phone?
It's still in there, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
There was a news report, and they just set up a camera and a reporter outside a church, and everyone's going in.
Right.
And they're stopping certain people.
Right.
And they just keep saying they're covered in the blood of Christ.
Oh.
I heard that. Right.
And I'm not very religious. I believe there's some other thing greater than us,
big
right?
Big time, yes. Big
okay,
time.
And everybody can believe whatever they want to believe. I would never argue with anyone over what they believe.
Of course not, no.
I know when your belief is strong, you want to go and, you know.
And God bless you.
But these people, they were saying, do you have it? All right.
It's a different video, but yeah.
Okay.
Aren't you concerned you could infect other people if you get sick inside?
No.
People that don't go to this
church. I'm covered in Jesus' blood.
Well, so it's like a whole montage.
Yeah,
clip
so
now, but
doesn't that sound, I don't know.
No.
Covered in Jesus' blood.
I don't think that's how it works.
Yeah, you need sanitizer and a mask, actually.
I don't know how it works, but wouldn't you want to say something that maybe the disbelievers would understand a little bit more? Like, well, you're covered in Jesus' blood. What did you do?
Exactly.
What happened? Why did you?
What happened?
What happened?
They ran out of sanitizer?
Right.
I'm covered in Jesus'
blood.
What about
other people who don't go to this church who you might encounter?
All of these people go to this church.
No, but you're going to be in places where other people
I go to the grocery store every day. I'm in Walmart, what? Home Depot, all of those people.
But you
people,
could get them sick from what happens.
They could
church.
Get me sick, but they're not because I'm covered in his blood. Thank you very much.
Okay.
The Walmart part doesn't surprise me.
Good for her. She has a very strong belief system.
She does.
But maybe you could just word it differently. That's all I'm saying.
How's your immune system, though?
Sound less crazy.
Can't you just say, these people are my family or
exactly.
These people.
I'm here to speak to Jesus.
Just realize, not everyone's going to get the whole blood in Jesus
exactly.
thing.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Sounds kind of ghastly, really. Right.
Chaz and AJ in the morning, 99.1 PLR, 95.9 The Fox. There are supermarkets now in Connecticut that will take your temperature before they allow you in. It's just keeps getting weirder.
Yeah, well, necessary, though. Necessary.
Yes, and we will be talking to someone from those markets at 8 o'clock.
Nice.
Right now, let's talk to our ER nurse. I call her our ER nurse because we've adopted her.
Yes.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Good morning.
How are you?
Well, the question is, see, this is what nurses do. How are you?
Yeah, how are you?
We're calling to check in. This is a well visit from us.
No, yes. How are you?
How are you? How are you holding up?
I'm holding up well. We're all holding up well. I just want to start by saying I'm so sorry about your friend.
Thank you. I saw
this morning. Yeah, I'm very sorry. It's happening, you know, young, healthy-ish people, they're going down. But thank you for asking. We are holding up well. I did follow up with a respiratory therapist that I know, and they are stressed. They're feeling it. I think the ICU and the respiratory therapists are the ones that are really feeling it now.
Describe what your day was like before this in the ER and then what it's like now.
You know, before, I will say it was hectic in a different way as far as volume. We had a lot of people coming in for various things, like I said before, from toe pain to belly pain to, you know, gunshot stabbings, you name it. Now it is a very eerie quiet. The people who are there really need to be there. We are doing a lot more COVID rule-outs than we, I think I talked to you guys a week ago. We were doing a lot more rule outs now than we were then. So it's picking up a bit.
Wow.
Would you say that you have a protocol at the ER that you feel pretty safe about?
Yes. It took a little, it was a work in progress. I think at first, you know, it took all of us by surprise. We didn't know, we still don't know what this is, you know, but we've got a protocol down now. If someone comes in with any kind of respiratory complaints, we gear up, we gown up, and until proven otherwise, every time we have contact with that patient or into the room, anyone from nurses to radiology doctors, we are geared up.
That's good. And I know I always like to ask the people that are doing the work what they would do differently if they were running the place. If you were running your particular ER, what would you do differently? Or have done differently?
You know, I got to be honest. I don't know if it's so much a problem with the actual hospital organizations more than our healthcare organizations. Like if I was the Joint Commission, I would have prepared better for this by having proper, you know, PPE ready for healthcare staff. So, you know, our administration at our hospital, they're scrambling like us. They feel helpless just like we do. You know, I think it comes from higher up from them. Like they should have prepared better for this at, you know, the Joint Commission level.
The one thing that you could say is that this threw off everybody.
Yeah.
Like, no one
everybody
can say, I was way in front of this. Yeah, no one can say, we, you know, we had it.
Blindsided, yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier that this is not just affecting old people.
Mm-hmm.
What are you seeing?
All ages, 20s, 30s, 40s, people with no prior health problems, people who've never traveled, people who thought they've been doing everything right and, you know, wearing masks and staying home. It's kind of random at this point. I even made a joke to my coworker. I'm like, why are we even asking people if they've traveled anywhere? I should be asking, have you gone to Target?
Right.
You know, it doesn't even really matter where you've gone. You're susceptible. So,
but you've also seen people that you've talked to that are wearing masks, gloves, trying not to go out, still coming in.
Still came up positive, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep. Still came up positive. So
that's
it's scary. Kind of, that's why I think there's so much more to this that we don't know, that they don't know. But yeah, it's we're finding out a little bit more every day.
Have you seen people come in who were pretty healthy and thought, nah, okay, I heard about this, it'll be flu-like and then I'll be fine, and then they, you know, not make it?
All the time. I think that's what's scaring us, is we're seeing people who ordinarily we would be, you know, hearing about them being discharged in a couple of days. And then, you know, we follow up. It's like, how's that patient doing? Oh, not so good. Oh, they're intubated. The same story as your friend. You know, they go in and it just kind of is this slow spiral downhill of people that you would expect to get better.
Yeah.
And, these
and
are
it's happening
with,
more frequently.
And these are people with underlying medical conditions, but some of them don't know they have it, right?
Yeah, some of them don't know they have underlying, you know, conditions because they really are young and have never gone to a doctor. But like I said, I really want to stress it's happening to healthy people as well.
Death or just serious?
Oh yeah.
Really?
Yes. Wow. Yes. Yep. And I'm not trying to overplay or downplay the situation, but
no. But I mean, think people need to hear the reality of what's happening.
Yeah. You know, people are dying. Yes, there are. You know. Several deaths in a night, you know, people, we need to really open our eyes and see it's not just, you know, 80, 90 year old grandma, please take heed. It can happen to healthy young people.
We're doing a thing on the radio station called Cards for Caregivers, and they're restaurant cards. So we're helping restaurants, but then we're giving them every penny that goes into this fund. We're going to use to buy cards for meals at restaurants for you folks, for frontline workers. Do you think that that's necessary? Do you think it's something that'll help?
I do. I think it's a good idea. I was thinking as to why, and two main reasons. One is for morale, you know, and like I said, we signed up for this. We would never complain, but it gets tiring. It really does.
But can I say, you're being very polite. Now, I know everyone in the healthcare business signed up to help people, but no one thought they were signing up for this.
Yeah.
A 100-year storm.
Yeah, no one saw this coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's true, but we did sign up to take care of the sick people through it all. You know,
right.
We can't abandon our patients. But I feel like we're not prepared as far as the PPE is concerned. And so for morale, state of mind, that would really help. Just knowing that someone thought enough about you to offer you a little dinner would really, you know, kind of put a smile through your night, because the nights are long.
Yeah.
They're long. And also it would help provide a meal, because money's tight and a lot of us are having to buy our own personal protective equipment now. You know, the hospitals have done what they can. So we are scrambling, just like you guys, on Amazon and eBay and, you know, all these sites trying to get masks and gowns and headgear and goggles. And so we've had donations and thank God for them. But, you know, we still have to prepare. So it would really help. You know, this stuff's expensive.
Yeah.
That's good to hear, because we want to do whatever we can. You know, so many people want to help. But one, we can't go out. Two, we don't want to go there and drop stuff off. So, this is good. If you go to WPLR.com, 959thefox.com, you could donate whatever amount you're comfortable with. Phil did it. It's very easy
nice
to do.
Easy,
it takes minutes.
Yep.
And 100% every penny will go to gift cards, which will help local restaurants and then also help these folks who are sacrificing everything to get us through this.
Hey, and good luck with young Chaz. I loved how he said it was his way to feel like he was serving the country. I was like, oh, I get it. It's not the same, but I definitely get it. Like, I feel in a way like by going into work every day, this is how I can serve my country. This is what I can do, you know?
Well, this whole thing has redefined a war. And we think of war as military people who have gone through training and specific training on battles and this and that and running equipment and then going overseas, fighting it far away. Then we hear it on the news. Hey, we're doing well, whatever.
Yeah.
This is, wow, this is people that are in my house. They're going to the, this war every day.
Exactly.
And they're not wearing uniforms with Kevlar vests and helmets.
The protection.
They're wearing scrubs.
Yep. Yeah.
They're wearing police uniforms or fire uniforms.
It's, exactly.
Or they're ringing people out at the grocery store.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Very dangerous, yes.
It is really dangerous.
Thank you very much for doing what you're doing and not bailing on us because we need you.
Never.
And thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Hug your wife again, guys. Thanks so much.
Thank you. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care. You
all
too.
Right. Bye. Bye-bye. Man.
A nice lady.
Yeah.
That's beyond nice.
Yeah.
Nice is, hey, good morning. How you doing? This is special. This is, I'm
dedication.
Putting different breed.
Yeah.
Different breed. Exactly right.
Chaz and AJ, Bruce Bennett Nissan News.
When normal is flipped on its head, it takes quite a story to catch your attention. This story caught my attention yesterday. Actually, Kristen's. And she sent it to me, and I was like, okay.
This has my attention. Yes.
The bonds market or markets will now check the temperature of people before they enter the store. Bob LeBond Jr., owner and president and CEO of LeBond's Market, is on. Hey.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Good morning. Tell us about this. So you're checking the temperature of everyone.
It would have started earlier if it didn't take so long to get them. I thought of this about 10, 11 days ago, and every morning I wake up since this crisis has started, and I ask myself, what else could I do to protect my people, their families, my customers, and my community? And I just have, you know, kind of tried to be on the leading edge of it. We put one of the first ones to put the plexi panels up at the register. We have now installed the shower curtain on the backside so that they're totally blocked off. First store, I think, to put a plastic shield between the deli and the customers. And then I just said, my wife is an RN currently working in the ICU. And she says, yeah, every day I have to get my temperature checked before I go in the building. I said, well, that's a high risk, high volume facility. Why not supermarket? So as soon as they came in on Tuesday night or Monday night, I started traveling around the stores, explaining to everyone how I wanted it done. And it's official as of yesterday afternoon. All the stores are up and running now, checking temperatures.
Nice.
Okay. What is the temperature cutoff? Does it vary for people? Some people run hot, some people don't.
So it just has a setting for high. I believe it's 100.5. And 20 minutes into my day in Prospect yesterday of starting to check, an elderly gentleman did test high, and he was very nice. I said, sir, I'm sorry, but you're running a slight fever. He said, oh, I didn't realize. And he turned around and went to his car.
There you go. See?
It was in the first 20 minutes.
First 20 minutes, 100.5. All right. So you just turn them away. If it's over 100 or over, or?
I think it's set right now at 100.5. I'd have to go back and look at the calibration, but I think that's what it's set at. And we're not telling people they can't shop. We offer curbside pickup or delivery.
That's great.
So we're just saying we just want people, if they're not feeling well, to stay home, ride this out, ask a neighbor or relative to shop with them or use our curbside or home delivery, and we'll still shop for them. We just don't want people that are sick walking through the stores and potentially getting other customers or associates sick.
Exactly.
How many people do you have outside the store doing this?
Just one, because it's pretty, you know, it takes literally 2 seconds. You don't touch them at all. You just scan the forehead about 2-3 inches away. It gives an instant reading, green light if it's blue, and red light and blinking if it's over.
So it's not a rectal.
No,
No,
that'll take some time. Not, yeah.
Yeah, that could. That might, who knows where right. this thing is going? Every day changes every hour, so right.
he has to order that piece of equipment. Thank you. Yes,
I like how he leaves it open.
Right,
it's like who knows? Yeah. But as it is
we
now,
have a lot of olive oil in the store. So
there you go. See, hey, how's the reaction with people? Like, are you having like people like getting like mad at you and stuff like that? Indignant?
So far, it's. I mean, it's only we've only been a half a day, and so far it has been 99%. I had one gentleman who was slightly upset because he thought I was going to touch him. I said, "No, we don't touch you," and then. One woman was upset that she thought it was starting on Wednesday because that's what the post said. But once I was able to get all the stores up and running, I started. And she said, well, that's why I avoided coming here. And that's why I came today. I didn't want to deal with this tomorrow. But I respect everyone's decision. It's just that I feel obligated to my 420 people, the 30,000 customers a week. I just don't want anyone pointing the finger down the road saying you didn't do everything in your power to try and keep us all safe.
So absolutely, yeah.
Hey, that guy who had the 100.5 temperature, he may have saved his life.
Yeah. And others.
He didn't know he had a temperature.
Right.
And then now maybe he'll do the right thing. You don't know.
And others inside.
Right. Right. No, it's sad. And if there's, they kept asking me, is there anything else you'd like to say? And we cater to a lot of seniors, and I am still amazed, truly amazed, that after, 3 weeks of, notices and public service, as they're still shopping. So many 70 to 80 to 90-year-olds are still shopping in my store 3-4 times a week. So I'm begging of the community relatives to please keep your elderly relatives and neighbors at home. Shop for them. They are struggling changing their shopping patterns, thinking it's more of a social thing, and it really isn't. And I'm scared for them because, again, having a wife who's working in the ICU and seeing what this virus is doing to people's lungs, it is scary. So I just want to keep our people and our customers safe.
Bob Lebon Jr., owner, president, and CEO of Lebon's Market, is on. They just instituted a new policy where customers' temperatures will be checked before they enter the store. So this includes Leblon's in Watertown, Woodbury, Salisbury, and Prospect. Prospect is Oliver's, right?
Correct. We just bought that store in December.
Nice.
Excellent. So this must start early with your employees, right? They all get checked.
Right. We have two guns. One for the we're also checking our bread and chip and soda vendors as they come in the back door. So we have a gun for the back door.
Oh, wow.
Employees.
Nice. See?
And then one for the customers.
For everything.
How have your staff people been? Have they been healthy?
Yes, knock on wood. We have had people that have chosen to, about 30 now, that have chosen to stay home because either they have some risk factors or they have family members at home. But everyone has been healthy so far, and I think some of the steps we've taken have helped with that. And be honest, it doesn't really matter what the public says. In respect to this policy, when my employees come up to me and say, thank you so much for doing everything right to protect us, that's what matters. But again, my first choice is my employees and their families, and then next is my customers and our community. And in fact, speaking of the community, we started a program last week where we're asking our customers to round up to a dollar or make a donation because the food banks are overwhelmed. We donate thousands of dollars a year to the food banks, and they just can't meet the demand. So we're asking anyone that shops in our store, if you're over the thumbs to $19.20, will you round up to 80 cents or make a one-time donation in any amount? And
that's great.
To help them because they can't fulfill the need right now.
That's great.
That's awesome.
And I'm guessing if you're doing temperatures at the doors, you're also doing cleaning the belts and gloves and stuff for your people.
Yeah, we've been doing that for about a month. So there's someone going around wiping the handles down to the frozen food doors, and everyone is gloved up and everyone wears masks every day now. So, yeah, this is a moving target. So we're just trying to stay ahead and do whatever we can to keep our stores safe for our customers and our associates.
And what's the deal with toilet paper? Has that settled down?
Finally, last night I was so shocked leaving Prospect. It was the very first time that I ever had toilet paper in any of our stores at closing time.
Wow.
Wow.
First day. So,
yeah. Good. I don't know where all this toilet paper went. Like, there's just not enough people to support it, right?
Right, yeah.
I had a friend of mine who's a plumber, had to do something, and he went into someone's house. It was an elderly person, and they had two bathrooms. Their entire shower stalls in both bathrooms were loaded to the ceiling.
Wow. That's so selfish.
So that explains why they're pretty stinky too, I guess, right?
Selfish, but I can see if it's an elderly person, the fear of going out and you could die.
But they're not showering, for Christ's sake.
So you're not thinking rationally when you think, if I go out, this is going to get worse, and if I go out later, weeks from now, I could die.
That thing springs a leak, man.
But if it's a guy like me, like, I don't know. I think that that's not a great thing to do for the community.
Right.
He said to the ceiling, two showers were full to the ceiling.
Yeah.
So you know what's going to happen? We've predicted this. There's going to be a house fire. The thing's going to go up like a haystack, and people are going to be like, what the hell happened there?
I smell paper.
Well, he would have made it out if it wasn't for all that toilet paper.
He kept on running back to get it.
Yeah.
My white gold.
And then what about the rest of the market, the food and stuff? Have you been able to keep up with that?
No. What happened is, you know, with all the restaurants and schools and people being home eating three meals a day, there's never been a stress on the food system. Do we have enough food? Yes. But what has happened is it's just there's such high demand and we're being allocated. And now what I'm hearing from the manufacturing side, whether it be a yogurt company or cheese company or any cereal company, there's people now might be getting sick and not coming to work. So what they're producing is limited. So it's all falls downhill. So if we're used to be at 100% inventory, we're running about 40% right now.
Wow.
And if you're doing a higher sales volume, you're constantly chipping away at that inventory level. So it's been a challenge. Some categories have come back. We're using a lot of local vendors as much as we can to fill Napoli and Scalfani and like that. But certain categories are just very difficult, but some categories are up and some are the same. But again, I was so excited to see toilet paper on the shelf at 6 o'clock last night.
That's a good sign.
Yep.
And Bob, I think Mayor Gannon was on weeks ago and he said, if you can make a decision and it's easy, then you're too late. And I applaud you for putting your employees and customers first with, you know, potential some backlash coming, but doing the right thing is always the most important thing. Bob Lebon Jr., owner, president, CEO of Lebon's Market. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you again.
All right. Take care. Not easy to do that. And, and he said, oh, we would have done this 11 days ago. I just had to wait for these to come in.
The scanners coming,
scanners.
And he thought of everything, man. Front door and back door. Delivery guys as well as customers.
Right.
Yeah. No, he's got this thing covered, man.
Gloves. And
yep. You shot there with confidence, man.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Good for him.
Taking care of everybody.
Absolutely.
Yeah, wants to do everything he can. Yeah.
All right. Let's go to Tony Terzi, our good buddy, Fox 61 reporter. He has a great story.
Morning.
Good morning. I got a picture from my Jennifer yesterday of this giant American flag hanging outside of Yale New Haven Hospital.
Right.
And Tony did a story on it, so we thought, well, let's get him on to tell the story.
Yeah, 2 days ago, I got a call from K&J Tree Service from Hamden, and they were telling me we're going to be at Yale New Haven today. We've gotten clearance. They brought their big crane in, parked it right outside the emergency room entrance on York Street, and they raised this 50-foot flag as high as they possibly could, and all the workers from the hospitals were just stuck to the windows and just taking pictures and videos, and they were coming outside the hospital. And just beneath the flag, Kyle DeLucia, who's the owner of K&J Tree Service, his niece, 10-year-old niece, I guess, had painted a thank you sign. And so we interviewed Kayla and we interviewed Kyle, and what a great story. People coming out thanking the crew for showing respect for frontline workers. It was such a nice story.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And, you know, I got to tell you, so many people went to the windows and then just teared up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's nice to know.
We saw one woman completely gowned up. I don't know if she was a doctor, a nurse, what role she played in the hospital. She had her camera up. She was either taking video or pictures, and then she put her phone down and she started wiping her eyes. It was clear she was crying.
Yeah. What else have you been seeing out there on the streets, Tom?
You know, I've been doing grocery store stories as well. I think we did the LeBron story yesterday at Fox 61, but I'm going to check with our crew because that's a great thing that Bob's doing. He's got a bunch of nice stores. And so I'm going to check on that as a possibility. Yesterday, I was in Ansonia. You know the big story that happened there. The mayor, Dave Cassetti, shut down the Riverwalk. And just in Ansonia, not Derby, not Shelton, just in Ansonia, because according to this woman who reached out to us, too many people have been, you know, crowding around, no social distancing. So she told the mayors of the three cities, Rich Zekin and Derby and Mark Loretti and Shelton, and the only one really to do anything about it was Dave Cassetti in Ansonia. He shut it down. Well, apparently she got a threat on social media. A guy reached out to her and said, "I hope you and your kids get coronavirus and your kids die from it."
Oh, wow.
God.
Unbelievable.
That's nasty.
So we did a Zoom interview or a FaceTime with her yesterday. And, you know, she was crying when she was talking about that particular part of the situation. And she said, "Look, I work in a supermarket. I'm in close quarters with people." And maybe she's a little extra sensitive about it because of that. But she said, I didn't like it. And the mayor said he's seen it numerous times over the last couple of weeks himself. So he said, "Look, I'm shutting it down." So he shut down that portion of the walkway yesterday morning or Monday morning. Yeah.
So what happens to this person who makes the threat? Do they get arrested or what happens?
You know, I don't know about that. I'm going to check with one of my buddies over in Ansonia Police today and find out if she filed a report, if she told them. She said, I'm ditching Facebook and I'm changing my phone number now. Yep.
Yeah, you can't. People. AJ knows all about Facebook.
Yes, I do. Trust me on this. I'm going for hours right now.
Tony Terzi, Fox 61 is on. And, you know, I don't know if you guys know this, but his dad is a legendary TV anchor in Connecticut. I used to call your dad the king of the Connecticut prom. Like, he's just that guy.
I know he's well-dressed. Yes.
How's he doing?
Big Al will be 78 in October. He's doing good, thank God. He and my mom are healthy. We're trying to stay away from them. And I'll tell you, I got killed 2 weeks ago last week on social media for saying that my mom, when she was out picking stuff up at BJ's or somewhere, she picked up a case of toilet paper for us and dropped it off on our front walkway.
Oh boy,
that's all I had to post on social media.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
How could you? You should be shopping for your parents. You're terrible. And
It is true.
It happens.
You should be shopping for your
children. Yeah. We don't want to say. Actually, it's an intervention. That's why we called
If you're going to send your parents out shopping for you, Tony, you got to send them to LeBron's.
Exactly right.
You're right.
They're careful over there.
And I swear to you.
It's a safe environment.
Guys,
or Market 32.
Yes. All those.
In Market 32 over in Oxford.
Yeah.
I swear to you, I didn't send my parents out. My mom was already out.
They happened to be out. Yeah.
Exactly right.
Your mom wants to take care of you.
Well,
yeah.
Tell your parents we were asking about them.
I will.
All right. Thank you, Tony. Guys. Thanks for coming on,
brother. Thank you.
All be safe.
So, how's it going at the grocery stores?
We just talked
to LeBron's. They said it was the first night they had toilet paper at closing.
Amazing.
At one of their stores.
Amazing.
Let's talk to Cameron at Market 32. How are you?
Good, thank you. How about yourself?
Yeah. Is this the most tired you've ever been?
almost, getting there.
Yeah.
How old are you?
I'm 23.
Yeah, you sound more calm.
23, AJ, and he's the overnight manager at Market 32, tremendous supermarket.
That's exactly.
Good job for you.
Successful
thank
guy.
Thank you.
Yeah, very successful, hardworking. Yeah. Are you worried about getting the coronavirus?
I try not to think about it. My focus is on just helping people out, which, you know, sounds silly just working at a grocery store. But right now with the way things have been, I'm just focused on getting the products out, helping people, and just keep updating them and just really focusing on that.
Yeah. And how's that been going?
Been going good. I mean, kind of messed up last week, though. I had as you know, I've been updating people on through Facebook. There's a great group called Oxford, Connecticut, and it has about 4,300 residents in it. So I've been updating every day on the status of the store, and I kind of let it slip that Friday was the best day to go shopping. So it didn't really help with social distancing because it seemed like everyone in the entire town decided to go shopping on that morning.
Oops.
And I've never, ever seen the store that busy before.
Oh.
Yeah, never.
Whoopsies.
And, yep, yep.
Oh, that's
and,
a horrible feeling.
Right, but the registers rang that time.
Oh, I'm hated for my coworkers right now. They all hate me.
You guys have been doing a good job with cleaning the belts, and I went in there the other day, and I was really impressed.
Nice.
Thank you.
Now, when you said that it was a good day Friday, that's because that particular Friday, or is it every Friday?
It's every Friday.
All right, you just did it again.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
you did it again. Go.
That's gotcha journalism right there. That's gotcha journalism.
You're going to need that toilet paper now.
It's not every Friday. It's a random thing. They go, oh, different days.
Right, nothing to see here, folks. Keep moving.
You never know what day it's going to be great.
All right, I'm going on Friday, though.
Go!
How's it been stocking the shelves? Has it been getting better or worse?
It's so and so. I mean, that's amazing to hear that store was the first time they had toilet paper at the closing. Unfortunately, I want to say yesterday was the first time we had toilet paper past 7 a.m. So
7 a.m.
Well, a.m.
Yeah.
Right. How many packages do you put out?
Three. We're still, tonight we only got two boxes in, so there wasn't much, but, it varies. Yeah, it varies. There's no telling how much we get in and, but it hasn't been a lot.
Wow. Yeah. Every time I don't even go down that aisle.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of like it's on the far side of the store.
Yeah. You get echo.
It just looks like, some shelves that they set up that they never got around to.
Exactly. When you hear someone going, damn it. You know, they'll go up there. Yeah.
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 All right. Well,
yeah, it's a black hole there.
Well, people will forgive you for making that mistake. You're just trying to do the right thing by the community.
Exactly.
You know?
Right.
Yeah. Trying to help. Thank you. I hope so.
All right, so all the things that we expect to not be there are not there, right? So toilet paper, cleaning supplies, like Clorox wipes, Lysol, that stuff.
Yep.
Anything else? Like meat?
Thermometers.
Right? Thermometers.
Yeah.
Thermometers, gotcha.
Thermometers. Everyone's been looking for that, and we just got a case in yesterday. Already sold out.
Wow.
But we just got a case in for the first time in over a month.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how have people been with, you know, their rubber gloves and their masks and their garbage?
You been clean?
Yeah, it's been much better, except the parking lot. I still want to put garbage cans out there, but it's getting a lot better. But everyone's coming and wearing it, and at least they're disposing it in the trash cans or trying to.
Yeah. I went in Thursday, and as I was out in the lot, Jennifer was texting me, please wear your mask. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I don't want to wear a mask. It just seems, you know, I don't know.
Batman mask.
Yeah.
Wear a mask.
And when I went in there, I saw a number of people were wearing masks. So then I thought, okay, it's okay.
Yeah.
Everybody else is doing it.
I didn't want to wear a mask. Then there's an old person without a mask because you can't get one. And then I feel like, oh, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just felt weird for me.
Yeah.
More people doing it now. All right, Cameron, thanks for checking in. We appreciate the update.
Be safe, man.
You're doing a great job.
Thank you.
What a good kid.
Yeah, he's cool.
Yeah, he's great. He just tried to help, you know?
Exactly.
That had to be a horrible feeling, you know? You post something, it's like, this will be good for the community, and then you look up, and it's just like a horde.
Pandemonium.
Bedlam, yes. What the hell
happened?
What
do you do? You go into your office, you lock the door, and I'll be over here.
You've got to toilet paper first.
Yeah. Yeah, you go over, you know, you just get in the fetal position and suck your thumb.
Right.
Well, the coronavirus became very personal yesterday, and I'll start by reading something we posted on the Chaz and AJ Facebook page, and then... we have someone very special on the phone. Chef Jerry, our brother and a great friend of the show, passed yesterday after a brutal battle with the coronavirus. He came on the air with us Friday, March 27th from his hospital bed, and although he was struggling to breathe and in pain to talk, he insisted on coming on to thank the nurses and tell us that they were heroic. Here's a minute from that phone call.
Just wanted to get on for a minute just to kind of make everybody aware that, you know, the seriousness of it, and especially with those who have issues like myself and the elderly, and but most of all, to really heads up and kudos to the health staff and the healthcare providers, because they're put under such strain, and they have to do everything. There's no housekeeping. No one's allowed. Just the nurse. So they clean the rooms. They feed you. And they do everything.
Damn.
And, you know, and plus to wear all the PPE gear. And I'm not sure if you heard, the reason why in Connecticut it's taken so long to get results is that the actual lab people testing the coronavirus are short on PPE. And so, you know, that's a big risk they're taking. So
that was Jerry to the end, to come on in pain, suffering, to thank the folks who are helping him.
Yeah.
So our hearts break for his family, especially his beautiful little girl, who he loved more than anything else. It was one of the final texts I had with him. He said he hoped he'd get a chance to see his little girl again. 57-year-old guy, big guy, couple of underlying health conditions, but not someone that was weak by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
Served his country in the United States Navy. And was co-owner of the Woodward House in Bethlehem for a long stretch of time. And young Chaz, when young Chaz was in middle school, worked for Jerry. And Jerry was just a close friend. And in February, he was over the house and with the morning show, and we all had a great time with him. And yeah. It's just, you know, when you think about this coronavirus, you think 70s, late 70s, mm-hmm. 80s.
Yeah, you don't picture Jerry.
This could be a guy that, or a girl that you were just with and they were great. And then one day they feel bad. The next day they're in the hospital. The next day they're dead. It could happen very fast. And Jerry, it was a brutal battle. He was in the hospital for a while. He fought back. He was getting better. And then the day that he was on the air with us, his temperature spiked, and then things started turning for the worse. He had to go on oxygen, and then they were trying to teach him how to breathe, which means they're trying to keep you off the vent.
Yeah.
And then he went on a ventilator, and we lost contact, and we heard yesterday that he passed. And on the phone now is Doug, a friend of Jerry's. Hey, Doug.
How are you, guys?
Hey, I'm very sorry for your loss.
Yeah, man.
I appreciate what you're doing for Jerry. I mean, I've known him since 1977. We went to high school, culinary school together, and it's a great tribute for him. He was an amazing guy, and I was in contact with him up until right before he went on the ventilator, and I know I speak for all of his old buddies from school, and we were pushing and hoping for the best, and we're all devastated at his passing.
I honestly thought he was going to make it through it because he's such a tough.
Same
he
here.
Was such a tough mm-hmm. son of a gun.
I didn't pitch this at all.
No.
And it's scary. He's my age, and to know that I mean, this could happen to any of us, and. And my heart breaks for his daughter and his wife and family. And I hope that at some point when all this craziness is over, we can meet and celebrate his amazing life.
When all this is over, there's going to be, sadly, a tremendous amount of people to mourn.
Yeah.
It's and there's no funeral for Jerry because you just can't have one now.
Yeah.
I remember going to the restaurant. You worked with Jerry in the kitchen?
No, I worked. I went to school with him. We were friends from culinary school, and we stayed in contact over the years. And I worked for Hard Rock Cafe, and currently at Yankee Stadium, which is closed. But we were back and forth, you know, in communication, and just we were supposed to actually meet for a baseball game. Obviously that won't happen now, but, I don't believe it. And he was always such a positive force. I mean, he was trying to get me to come to work for Flick with him, and that never happened. Mm. But I'm devastated, and like I said, my heart is broken for his family, his daughter, and his wife, it's just unbelievable what's happening right now in the world.
Well, we've been talking about this on the air for weeks before we went on vacation. We've been back for 3 or 4 weeks now. And I hate to say it, we felt the importance of it, but it becomes more than numbers when it's somebody that you know that you wouldn't even expect.
On your radar, no.
All right, he'd get some flu symptoms and it'd go away.
Right. Too young, too strong.
So, you know, Jennifer said it best last night. It's just numbing. You're not even... You just like what?
You can't fathom it.
We're still in the numb state.
Yeah,
you know?
You can't fathom it.
But I just want to leave on this note about Jerry is at the Woodward House, he would always bring me into the kitchen to show me how clean the kitchen was.
Yeah.
It was the cleanest kitchen in the world. And he would have all of his people scrub everything by hand. He didn't just throw stuff in the dishwasher. He scrubbed everything by hand.
Yeah.
The floor, you could eat. He would say, Chaz, you could eat off the floor. Come in here and take a look.
Have a great meal for it.
And it would be 9 o'clock on a Friday night. Yep. The kitchen is immaculate. Took great pride in that. And then he would walk around and chat up everybody at every table.
I mean, that was nice.
He loved the back and forth with people. He loved learning more about people. And he was just someone you could talk to about anything.
Yeah.
You could bring up anything. And he has something
he
to contribute to the conversation.
Yep.
Big guy, tough guy, but the kindest man you could ever meet.
The gentle giant.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we will always love him. I will always have fond memories of Jerry. And again, hopefully we can get together and celebrate his life and because he was amazing.
That would be tremendous.
Absolutely.
And thanks for coming on and sharing that with us.
It was an honor. I appreciate it.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, brother.
Chaz and AJ, Bruce Bennett Nissan News.
Well, we're going to talk to the guy now who definitely has some answers for this coronavirus in Connecticut. It's Dr. Stephen Choi, Chief Quality Officer for Yale School of Medicine and Yale New Haven Health System. He is the point person for coronavirus for Yale New Haven and Yale Health. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Good. Thank you for doing what you're doing, and we want to start off with saying hello to your kids.
Oh, yeah. I just want to give a big shout-out to my son, Ethan, and my daughter, Alex, who I haven't seen in a while. But, I try to talk to them every day, and lots of FaceTime and lots of love. So I will see you guys one day very soon. Love you both.
And when you say you haven't seen them in a while, how long has that been?
Longer than I'd like to say.
All right.
Really?
Thank you for making these sacrifices for us. And we want to thank, is it Ethan?
Yep. Ethan and Alex,
thank you for loaning us your dad. We really need him right now.
Yeah. We'll get him back to you.
We'll give him back to you.
We'll get him back to you one of these days when we're done. Okay. Be patient.
Yeah. Do we see a flattening here? We heard the governor say flattening, but I look at the chart. It doesn't look very flat.
Sure. So there's different ways you can look at the chart. One of the things we like to measure in the hospital with our epidemiologists and our biostatisticians, those are the really smart guys who look at outbreaks like coronavirus, the swine flu, SARS, MERS. We look at what we call the doubling rate. And that's how quickly do the cases double, both in the community and in the hospital. And when it's really bad, the doubling rate is every 2 days. Every 2 days, the number of cases double. So you'll go from 100 to 200 to 400 to 800, 1600, and so forth. So we want that doubling rate to stretch out. And I shared this with some very clear, close friends who clearly know that, you know, I'm being cautiously optimistic. I've told them that, you know, the last few days I am, again, cautiously optimistic that the curve is starting to flatten in Connecticut. And I think that's a great sign. And more importantly, for all the, you know, the listeners in the audience and everyone in the state of Connecticut and really, you know, around the country, those of you who are practicing social distancing, this is what's paying off. And we thank you for helping us in the hospital, because that is the most effective thing people can do to help fight this pandemic, please be responsible.
So, Doc, I think we have a good cell phone connection. I think we just need to adjust where the mouthpiece is so we can hear you better, because what you're telling us is very, very important. The protocols at hospitals, are they standardized around the state? Because I'm hearing, you know, we have ambulance people calling in saying some hospitals are not as together as others.
Yeah, there's definitely some variation, particularly in the medications. And then you've heard about the use of hydroxychloroquine, the drugs that are used to, you know, prevent malaria. That's a pretty standard drug for most hospitals. But the other drugs that people are using, they're not as standardized across all the hospitals. For Yale New Haven Health System, we have, you know, what we call the, you know, coronavirus cocktail, which it consists of, you know, that drug, the hydroxychloroquine. We have a monoclonal antibody that helps suppress one of the particular proteins that cause a lot of inflammation in the body. And then we have this trial drug, if you remember the Ebola virus, we have a drug that we're using on a clinical trial that was targeted for that drug initially, but we're also seeing some impact on the viral load when you give it to patients with coronavirus. And the last drug that we're using, if patients don't respond well, particularly they get severely ill, like those patients who end up in the ICU and end up on a ventilator, we're using a pulse steroid or stress dose steroid pulse for patients.
I hear that the malaria / mix with antibiotics is working, right?
Well, you know,
not a cure, but working, helping.
Well, their reports and their case reports, rather than a real trial of drugs, where you've got one group, let's say Chaz gets drug X and Y, and then AJ gets hydrochlorine and azithromycin, and then you determine, you know, amongst enough patients, did it really make a difference? In this case, what they're doing is they're looking at just patients who've got the azithro and the chloroquine and determining if they had an effect. And some of them have gotten better, but we don't really know if they would have gotten better with or without it. Some of the concerns that, you know, a lot of physicians have raised is that, you know, that combination of drugs can cause what we call a prolonged QT. That's a interval inside your heart, the electrical conduction that can cause some fatal arrhythmias if you take those two drugs at high doses. So we've been avoiding that combination for that reason. And also, we haven't seen convincing evidence yet that those two drugs make a real impact.
That prevents you from giving them to cardiac patients, correct?
Excuse me?
Hydroxychloroquine. The hydroxychloroquine, because it promotes a long QT syndrome, can you give them to cardiac patients with arrhythmias, or can they not receive that treatment?
No. So those drugs are, you know, meant for patients with malaria, and the azithro is the you know, common day Z-Pak. And so those two drugs combined together have been used in some centers to, you know, treat coronavirus patients. But the results aren't terribly convincing, or at least not yet. And because of that side effect profile, we're being very careful about it.
And how's New York City doing? What are you hearing from your colleagues there?
So, you know, I think they're finally getting a breath of relief. You know, there are thousands of patients in New York City that are in the hospitals and probably thousands of patients who've been in the ICU. Unfortunately, they've had a lot of death as well, too. But they're finally getting a little bit of relief, you know, the comfort ship, which, you know, arrived this past week. Initially was not taking any COVID patients, but right. We just found out yesterday that they are going to take COVID patients.
Yeah, they don't have enough non-COVID patients to make sense. They had 20 people on the ship.
Exactly.
I know. And I know doctors are very, very thankful and fortunate that they're able to send those patients over there.
How are we doing with PPE and ventilators? I mean, depending on who I talk to, we get different stories. Some hospitals have enough, yeah. Some people don't.
Yeah, so, you know, as you can imagine, you know, New York City alone has as many cases as all of Wuhan and Hubei province had, which is astonishing, right? And the U.S., if you look at the latest numbers, if you guys remember what the major epidemic areas were initially, that was China, South Korea, Iran, and Italy. And just this past week, we surpassed all those countries combined together in the number of cases. So we've been just burning through all our PPE at a tremendous rate.
At a time where the rest of the world is looking for it as well.
Exactly. So, you know, a lot of those PPE items, like particular masks, a lot of them come from China and a lot of them come from Italy. So we've been at a shortage. We have not hit the point where we've run out of those particular respirator masks, but we also have the advantage of creating a sanitation process where we can re-sanitize those masks and replace them. And you know, we're able to replace up to 15,000 of those masks every single day. So, you know, we're fortunate. You know, there are some other hospitals that are running lower, but, you know, we've had shipments coming in from various vendors over the past week. And so we're optimistic about that. And then with the ventilators, you know, right now we've got capacity, but, you know, like you said early on the show, you know, the flattening the curve is not a slam dunk where you flatten the curve and then, you know, we all high five and say it's all over.
Yeah.
That's a long, drawn out process. So you want to flatten the curve so that the patients are just stretched out in terms of the transmission over an extended period of time.
Yeah, I you can look at the chart from Italy, and you could see when they started flattening out and getting it under control, I think there was a sense of confidence, yeah. Maybe too early, and you could see the chart goes back up.
Yeah.
Like people went out, they started doing things, and then they were right back in the situation they were in before. How has this impacted your workforce, the healthcare workforce?
Yeah, so we've got a lot of people that are out, particularly those frontline critical care workers, like the critical care doctors, the critical care nurses, the respiratory therapists. And that's really beyond our PPE and our ventilators and our ICU beds. You know, we consider that our most valuable resource. You know, we can make beds, and you probably saw, you know, the governor was on our New Haven campus over at Southern Connecticut. I want to say it was about a week ago where we opened up or set up a 100-bed field hospital. We've got another 50-bed field hospital at one of the gymnasiums at Yale University. So we can make more beds. We can order more ventilators. We've created ventilators that can potentially ventilate two patients.
Did you see we talked to Dr. Anwar from Manchester who split it into seven. Did you see that? And what do you think?
Yeah, we saw that. So, you know, you need to have a certain compressor that's, you know, strong enough to generate that kind of flow. So we're going to just start with one for now. Hope we never have to get to that point where, you know, we have to buy a giant ventilator like that. But depending on what kind of ventilator you have currently, there's a lot of limitations. But, you know, you can do things like he did, do things like we did. You know, you can get more PPE by ordering it. You can, you know, re-sanitize it. But you just simply can't order more ICU docs or order more critical care nurses out of a factory.
Right.
I mean, I'm being redundant there, but it's just not possible to get these people. So we want to protect this workforce. And, you know, they're stretched. You know, we've expanded our ICU by 3 or 4-fold already just to accommodate all the patients that are coming in.
This is why, and I know people are tired of hearing it, but it's not getting through to everyone, and for the few people it hasn't gotten through to yet, this is why we need to social distance, right, wash your hands, do all the right things, stay home, so we don't overrun the healthcare system, which is kind of happening right now. In your meetings with all these smart people, Doc, how long does this play out?
Sure. So the typical course for patients who are at home can be anywhere from just a few days to maybe a couple weeks.
No, I'm sorry. I mean, how long do we...
Oh, how long does...
Yeah.
I gotcha. How long is the pandemic going to play out?
Yes.
Months. And like I said, guys, it's better if it's months. If it's just a couple weeks, that means the hospitals will have been overrun with infected patients.
Right.
So remember, flattening that curve, you know, means it's flattened out over a period of time. So
you mean social distancing for months?
Yes.
Gotcha.
And, you know, we're anticipating the toughest weeks in Connecticut will be these, you know, upcoming 2 weeks. I think New York's a couple weeks ahead of us. So they're finally seeing some, you know, sliver of daylight.
Hopefully.
Starting to kind of flatten off. And that's what their numbers look like. I know yesterday was tough because we had a peak in the number of deaths in the city and really in the U.S. But I think we're probably in this, you know, for a couple months at least.
All right. So you think that your gut, not that you're passing on any official information, but your gut would tell you that we would go beyond this April 30th recommended social distancing?
So.
Yeah.
I think so.
All right.
Because what you don't want to do is have all those people who are, you know, very responsible, compliant, diligent, staying at home, sheltering in place, then go out and then become infected.
Then it was all for nothing.
It's like that second wave. And if you remember from history books, that's what happened in the early 1920s with the Spanish flu. That some of the cities in the U.S. said, all right, you know, we're self-isolating, but I think we're safe now. And everyone go out, and some cities were decimated with casualties because of that second wave when people sort of lifted their guard too soon.
So what businesses and people, and of course we're just talking here, what businesses and people should be doing now is planning on how to do business and things differently for a long period of time, not looking at, well, April 30th we'll be back, so let's start planning picnics in June, right?
Well, you know, when people have asked me, you know, about the summer, you know, I sit on, you know, the board of Hole in the Wall Gang Camp with
that's tremendous.
My friend Jimmy Canton, who's the CEO, and you know, we've talked about what are we going to do about the summer programs, and you know, what we decided was, you know what, those early summer programs, it's probably safe to say we're going to postpone / cancel those. But, you know, the mid to late summer programs, let's just wait, because, you know, unless you absolutely have to make a decision of, you know, make a deposit withdrawal at a certain time where you've made plans, if you haven't done that, I think it's good to just kind of wait and see. But I think it would be too early to start planning for early summer for sure.
All right. Thank you, Doc. Thank you so much for coming on. I know we're going to talk to you once a week and just get an update, and hopefully you get back with your children real soon.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love you, Alex. Love you, Ethan. See you guys very soon, okay?
And thank you, Dr. Stephen Choi. Man, are we lucky.
Yeah.
Gets me. That really gets me. He can't see his kids, you know, and he's doing something so good for all of us, but it just breaks my heart.
Yeah, that's a tough one. But that was some good information. Chaz and AJ in the morning, 99.1 PLR, 95.9 The Fox. Well, something finally happened in sports that's worthy of having a conversation while there's a worldwide pandemic.
Okay.
Sports powered by Blasius Chevrolet in Waterbury. And, of course, to talk about this, we have to bring in our old buddy Jason Page.
Ah.
So.
What's up?
Baseball.
Yeah. No. I hate to pour cold water on this because I know you kind of want to get excited about the idea of, hey, sports is returning and all of that.
I know. But it's a crazy, crazy plan.
Crazy.
It's insane. I look, my Monday's edition of my podcast actually talks about
first, let's
this
do
whole,
this. Let's give the headline, yeah, and then we'll discuss.
Okay.
All right. So what happened?
Well, Major League Baseball is talking about a plan to come back in May.
Really?
We're already into April. You'd need a few weeks. And look, under this plan, they would play games in Arizona, only in Arizona. Okay, they're gonna where you've got about 13 stadiums that are equipped to handle baseball, Major League Baseball.
You know what politicians do when they have ideas that they think could be really stupid?
What?
They'll float it.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
They'll have someone just like from the press media, yeah, say, hey, we heard, mm-hmm, unconfirmed, and then they, yeah, just put it out there,
right,
and no one's talking about sports, so everyone would just kind of have a feeding frenzy on the story,
right,
and then you kind of see how it goes.
Yeah, get a reaction, get a
right?
gauge.
Because this one was a bad idea. We all know we're not the smartest people. We all know it's a bad idea.
Yes.
And then for them to come out and say this is just horrific.
But people on Twitter did eat it up. People were like so ravenous for some kind of sports
course.
Content. They were like, technically, and the CDC supposedly backed this whole plan. It was insane.
Yeah.
I mean, look, are you going to play games without fans? I mean, that's kind of what we're talking about here, this idea of
some teams
games.
Do. Yeah.
Yeah, and some teams do, exactly. So for some teams, it wouldn't be all that big a change if you're Tampa Bay or Oakland, you know, playing games in front of 10,000 people on a good night. But the reality is, I want you to just think about this for a second. There's going to be a PTSD to all of this,
yeah,
for fans. Everybody thinks we're going to flip a switch. Somebody's going to say, hey, let's get back to watching pro sports, and everybody's going to go run to the stadiums. This is pure folly. Go look at the streets of New York City right now. The toughest people in the world. People are staying in. People are legitimately afraid. I want you to imagine sitting at a baseball game, and this is things that people don't think about, but imagine sitting at a baseball game and you get a hot dog from a vendor. Think about the 17 hands that are going to touch that hot dog before,
yeah,
it reaches you at your seat.
Think, is it 17? That's an odd number.
It's a lot. You're going to hand. Think about the cash that you're going to be handing back and forth amongst all those people. I mean, look, these are all these things that we've taken for granted over the years. That when, mm-hmm, we go to the baseball stadium next, or go to a football game next, think about tailgating. Part of the joy of going to a football game, whether it's a UConn game up at Rentschler Field, a game at Yale Bowl, or a game at MetLife Stadium, is the tailgating. Well, who the hell's going to want to line up and sit next to each other to tailgate? You're not going to just be able to flip a switch and sports is going to come back and the fans are going to come back. There's going to be a long period of time where people are going to be gun-shy about going back to the ballpark.
How about a weenie drone? That would work.
A what?
A weenie drone for your snacks.
Some ballparks do have a weenie cannon. Well, they'll fire hot dogs, mm-hmm, from the field level,
exactly,
into the stands.
Open your mouth.
Watch fire. Your eyes.
Exactly, yeah, right.
But I look, owners are probably getting, you know, are getting anxious. You know, they're looking at the bottom line. A lot of these teams are cash poor to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their franchises are worth a ton of money, but a lot of these middle market and smaller market teams are cash poor to begin with. They're trying to figure out how they're going to pay players. If you're playing in front of empty stadiums, you're paying players their full salary, but you're not getting the gate, you're not getting the tickets, you're not getting the concessions, you're not getting the goofball who's buying the hat at the stadium for double the price instead of buying it on Amazon for half the price. You're losing all of that. I don't see any feasible way. I don't see any feasible way.
I don't feel for this story just makes me angry, right? Because you're talking about billionaires, right? These teams are worth billions. You're talking about people who are not going to starve, trying to squeak pennies out of people who, one, can die, two are like, do they even know what's going on the ground?
I know.
Probably not.
Are they reading any of this?
What they should be doing is not saying, hey, we're going to think of this idea. We're going to bring baseball back in May in Arizona. They should be like, hey, how can we help our community?
Right.
Healthcare workers, people out of work, restaurant, hospitality, frontline, cops, firefighters. This is gross.
Who wants to be responsible for killing somebody in their fan base?
Right.
I mean, think about that. Who wants to be the owner that says, yeah, you know what? It's a good idea to have fans back in the stadium. And then when you find out one of them died during the community spread of this. But there is another side to this. I can play both sides of anything.
All right. I think we do a part two tomorrow, but let me just run me through how this came out. So it's announced by who, at what time, and then where are we at right now? And kind of take me through that 24-hour period.
Well, it was kind of floated out there about these conversations between the Players Association and the owners in Major League Baseball. And now, I'll be honest, where it is now, the way it's been described by one baseball writer is it's basically in the top of the first inning. I mean, this thing is so far away from happening. I think you're looking at an August return for baseball at the earliest. Maybe you get something in July. And even at that point, like I said, how are you gonna avoid community spread and a spike in the numbers of having people go to the ballparks? I just don't see it.
I just think that people, these are the people who, you know, in Hollywood, they just come up with the same movie.
Yeah.
And these are people walking into the Major League Baseball offices with just one idea. We just play baseball. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you run.
Brilliant.
And then you have fans and you sell. There's got to be a different way to do this, right? Like a pay-per-view, you know, a home run derby.
Right.
Something where a machine's firing a ball and there's only one player. There's got to be, you have to start retooling everything. Right?
Yeah.
You can't do it like, hey, we're going to have 30,000 people all sitting next to each other, like eating off the same hot dog.
That's a big hot dog. That's a big hot dog. A bigger gun for that one.
All right. There's a lot more to talk to. Can we?
Yeah, there is.
All right. So can we do tomorrow?
Yeah, we can do tomorrow.
All right. So part two with Jason at this time tomorrow. Thank you, brother.
See you guys.
How do we, where are you on Twitter? It's whatever.
At the back page.
Exactly.
At the back page on Twitter. We'll link up. Thank you, brother. All right, who's hungry?
I'm hungry.
Who wants pizza?
I'm hungry. Me.
Pizza
me.
So bad.
The second you said colony, my stomach just went. Bruh, bruh.
Yeah, don't forget, Lent is ending, so I haven't had pizza in 40 freaking days.
Chaz and AJ in the morning, 99.1 PLR, 95.9, the Fox. Ken Martin, co-owner at Colony Grill on the phone. Co-owner.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having us.
I feel like you guys are the original hot oil pizza, right?
Yeah, we've been serving hot oil before I was born, and Colony Grill dates back to 1935. That's our calling card, and that's what we sell the most of.
Damn.
1935.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's going back away. It's a lot of pizza.
1935.
I don't know. See?
What were you selling pizzas for then? Like a penny?
Yeah, inflation has increased the price.
Actually, you give them a chicken. You give them a chicken, then you give it a pizza.
It costs a quarter penny to make, and they charged a penny.
Yeah, say, my
I got a penny.
Phil, can you do a fact check on 1935? I'm just interested. Man, that's something.
You can buy a car for $5.
The original place is in Stamford?
That's correct.
All right, so where were... All right, so tell me the story. Your family comes over. How does this all begin?
Yeah, so it's not my family business. My partners and I, we all grew up together in Trumbull. Known each other since, when we were playing Little League and way back when. And we were all at a part of our lives back in 2009 where we wanted to do something together as a business. And we said, well, what do we want to do? You know, we're not that smart of guys. It has to be fairly simple. So Colony Grill was a part of our childhood, on the way to baseball games and going to New York City. We'd stop there and just a lot of great memories. So we decided to reach out. And as you guys know, timing is everything. And the owners of Colony at that point were kind of ready to, I think, to make a change. And we stepped in and have since grown the business to 5 locations. And
that's fantastic.
We have some great employees. So yeah, it's been a great ride.
You tell us what your spitballing ideas. You don't say let's buy. How about Colony Pizza?
Right.
It must have been a couple of ideas, and then pizza. Well, we could do pizza. How hard can pizza be?
Right, we do pizza.
And then, all right, where are the top places for pizza? Oh, our favorite is Colony. Is that how it kind of went?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many great pizza places in Connecticut, as you know. We grew up on Colony. It's unique pizza. It's thin crust. It's called a bar pie because it can fit on a bar. It's easy to manage. You can have a drink in your hand and handle it. And, you know, we didn't want to do there's a lot of, you know, chain restaurants out there. There's a lot of franchises that are, you know, good franchises, but we wanted to do something really simple. You know, Colony is, basically pizza and drinks. That's all we are. And we love that. We find that it's easy to, you know, treat our guests well and our employees well within that concept. And, you know, we couldn't be happier where the business is, even amid this. You know, even amid what's going on right now, we have tremendous employees, we have tremendous guests, and we have tremendous people in the community like you guys who are, you know, taking the time to let people know that restaurants are open for business. And, you know, what you do day in and day out, you know, since I think the early 2000s is just, you know, it's just remarkable. You know, Chaz and AJ have been there for, you know, for the community through thick and thin, and you know, basically you guys are a comfort and a common sense resource for people. So I just want to let you know that Colony Grill appreciates it. And I know other people do as well.
Wow.
No, thank you so much.
I don't know what to say. Did someone tell you to say that? Or?
It's written over here. Okay, so you got my note.
I rehearsed that.
Yeah. I'm like, wow, this guy instantly made me fall in love with him. I already love this product.
So next to Chaz and AJ Pizza, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So you start in Stanford. Thank you very much,
yeah,
by the way.
So
I'm going to carry that with me all day, and I needed a pick-me-up today.
Right, and a slice.
So you buy Stanford, and then now you're Milford, Fairfield, Norwalk, Port Chester, and the pizza truck.
Correct.
I've been to Milford and Fairfield, and always a great experience. And your hot oil pie, that was the first time I had one. Mm-hmm. Everyone seems to have one now.
Yeah.
But it is amazing.
It's great.
It's really just the right amount of everything. Oh. It's really, it's science, AJ. You can't just guesswork this stuff.
Yeah, no.
But you know what I do love also is that it changes every time you have it because it depends on the season of the peppers.
Yeah.
So if you have like a really hot, really dry summer, by like October, if you're walking in and you're getting a hot oil pizza, you're like, ooh! Ooh, I've got tears coming out of my eyes.
I suck those down all the time, man. I've had many of those. Yes.
I was there with a friend once, and he was eating a pizza, and the peppers were so hot they were making him cry.
I love this.
Yeah, I go to Milford location all the time and get it.
I'm not a big crust eater, but I eat every
scrap.
Drop.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's nothing left but
crumbs.
An oil slick on the pan.
Yep.
It's the only way to do a Colony Pizza is an entire pizza to yourself.
Exactly, right. Don't share.
Ken, how has this whole thing changed what you guys are doing? How are you doing it now?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's a unique time and, you know, stressful time for all restaurants. Certainly, we're a part of that. You know, no dine-in customers. So the bars and dining rooms are dark, but... you know, we're fortunate that we had a takeout presence, you know, coming into this event. So, you know, our guests have been utilizing us for takeout and curbside and we're utilizing our pizza truck in a little bit of a different way right now. So, you know, certainly business isn't where it was, you know, coming into this, but, you know, we're keeping people working. We're providing the pizza for, you know, for hopefully a comfort food for our guests. And, you know, we're managing through. So, you know, we're encouraged at where we're at, all things considered. And, you know, things like this, being on air with you guys, say help. So, again, thank you.
You're very welcome. And thanks for being part of our family.
Yes. Absolutely.
And same thing. Call, come down, pick it up.
Yeah, you can call. We can, we're happy to take the order online, which is, you know, non-contact payment. You know, we're very mindful of social distancing and sanitation, hygiene, you know, certainly coming into this, but, you know, more than ever now. And, you know, we try to make it as easy as possible for guests to pick up the pizza.
See, it takes me 12 minutes to walk from my house to Colony Grill.
12 minutes. You
12
have
minutes.
Time.
Yep. 12 exact minutes. Yep.
Is that in flip-flops or sneakers?
In flops.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Milford and Fairfield I've been to, but Jennifer keeps telling me I have not lived until I've been to Stanford. Would you agree with that? Or?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
Phil does, because he's from Stanford.
Yes, he is.
I think, you know, obviously that place has a lot of history. It's been there, that same neighborhood for, you know, almost 90 years now. So, it's just a great community. It's the Colony was the Irish neighborhood that the restaurant opened in. So they called it the Colony. Now that's where the Colony Grill name comes from.
Oh, that's great.
And, that's the original. That's the mothership, as they say. And, it's a good experience.
Well, I'm going to be there. I'm going to be there to get takeout, but I'm going to be there. As soon as that dining room opens, I'll be there.
Yep.
Ken, thank you for the kind words, and thanks for coming on.
Yeah, really appreciate it. I know you're probably up against it for time, but we're heading over to Bridgeport Hospital today to drop off some pizzas, and just want to say there's a really special guest over there named Virgil Procaccini, and we're just sending him love. So thanks, guys.
Virgil.
Thank you.
Virgil, we're thinking of you, brother.
Virgil.
All right, Ken, thank you for coming on, and thanks for making the best pizzas.
Thank you, guys. You guys are the best.
You're the best.
No, you are!
Oh, I love that guy.
Yeah. I like pizza.
How do you not like that guy?
Seriously.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.